You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft and minor league experts, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. We welcome you. Corey Seager, guys, made his Dodgers debut at shortstop Thursday night in San Diego. 2-for-4, 2 RBIs, 2 runs scored, flawless on 5 chances in the field. Manager Don Mattingly said, quote, "He looked good. He looked really good," unquote. That's an understatement, Jonathan.
Yeah. Obviously, it's all you can hope for, and more other than the fact that they didn't win the game. But you know, I don't think it's a surprise at all that he sort of got there and contributed right away, and has performed, you know, very well, like he belongs since he's been up. And maybe that's the benefit of a little extra minor league time. You know what? The Dodgers aren't the only organization that likes to wait until a guy is ready to come up, or when they feel he's ready, so he not only gets there, but he stays there and contributes. And, as long as he hits, he's going to play. And I think he's going to hit, so I think he's going to play. You know, he plays short, and you could slide him over to third at times, unless they don't want to mess with a good thing too much. But, for those of us who have been waiting for him to come up, pretty much for the entire second half, this is kind of what we expected, and I think you're going to see more of this going forward.
Jim, I happened to be at the game in San Diego, and he certainly appeared, from my vantage point, to be very relaxed for a guy making a major league debut.
Yeah, I guess that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, if you want to try to read into that, I mean, his brother's been a big leaguer, so I don't think the big leagues are unfamiliar to him. He probably has a better handle on that. I mean, he can go to his brother and ask him about his experiences. So I don't think that would be much of anything. Jonathan, I think you're being a little too kind to the Dodgers. I don't think it would. I don't understand why they waited so long to call him up. It doesn't make sense to me with the way Jimmy Rollins has played not particularly well this season. I'm not convinced that they were going to call him up before Justin Turner hurt his finger. I think he might still be at Oklahoma City, maybe playing in the PCL playoffs or maybe coming up today. But the thing that's good, since they have brought him up, he has started 4 of their 5 games, 2 at shortstop, 2 at third. I've said this many times on many radio shows and podcasts all summer. Dodgers are paying more than $300 million in major league salaries to guys on their team, and guys are picking up the tab on other teams this year. And anything short of a World Series championship is going to be a colossal disappointment. And to that end, I would think that you'd want to have your best players on the field. And I think when you watch, Jimmy Rollins is, decrepit old body staggering around the diamond, not hitting like he has in the past, that you would have had this guy up sooner. I think they're doing the right thing now. I think they're doing the smart thing. Let this guy play regularly. Find out if he's ready to hit in the big leagues, which so far he's hit safely in every one of his starts, doubled in 3 of them. So far, so good. Small sample size and all that. But if he is one of your best players, it would be foolish not to have him on your postseason roster and not to have him in your lineup in October when you're trying to win that World Series. So I'm just glad he's getting the chance now. I know it's easy. You and I both cover prospects, and I like prospects as much as the next guy, and I know I probably advocate more on the side of prospects than anything, but I just think it's inexplicable that you wait till September 3rd to find out if Corey Seager can help your team. Now, granted, they're going to win their division regardless, but, when the division was tighter during the summer, I just was surprised they did not call him up before that.
Guys, another call-up. The Chicago Cubs having called up C.J. Edwards, Carl Edwards Jr. Jonathan, tell us about him.
He's an interesting arm, Ed. The Cubs got him from the Rangers as part of the Matt Garza trade, and had been a starter early on. But if you've ever, anybody who's ever seen him, stuff-wise, I think there wasn't that much question about, starter relief. But he is one of the most slender, and maybe Jim will say I'm being too kind, slender pitchers.
So you're being
I've
accurate
ever seen.
There. You're being very accurate.
Yeah, he's one of those guys you see pitch and you want to call Fenton out and bring him a sandwich.
The second coming of Mike Lacoste.
right, exactly. Yeah, no, he is a candidate to be a Kent Tekulve dance between the raindrops kind of guy, and But the stuff is tremendous. This year, the Cubs shortened him up and put him in the bullpen with some good success. The stuff is going to play up out of the bullpen. I don't know if he's going to have any major impact between now and the end of the season, other than to give an extra arm to a bullpen. And listen, everybody's bullpen is worn out come September. I don't care how well you manage it. So to have an extra guy who, there's no question that he can get big league hitters out, especially in those, in small doses coming out of the bullpen. Whether or not he's one of those guys who get, they try to sneak onto the playoff roster, maybe if he's lights out and it's a K-Rod kind of thing, I don't know if he's going to get that much of a chance to pitch. But like I said, at the very least, it gives them another arm that they can potentially count on to get some outs between now and the start of the postseason.
Jim, you find him impressive?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I saw him a lot in the Fall League last year. I still think, there are some people with the Cubs who would like to kick around the idea of making him a starter. You just don't know if he's going to hold up. And he had issues in 2014 with a strained right shoulder that they handled very cautiously. He looked very good as a starter. In the Fall League, I think pitch and relief, you're going to get 93, 95 out of him. He's got some power and depth to his curveball. Has not thrown a ton of strikes this year in relief. Has missed a lot of bats, but not thrown a ton of strikes, which is why I think they didn't call him up earlier. He was on the 40-man roster, so he was an obvious guy to call up. They've got, Rondon and Strope and Justin Grimm have pitched well out of their bullpen. I would think, like Jonathan, I would be surprised if he got an opportunity to do a ton, except you kind of, provide, maybe lessen the stress on the rest of the bullpen at this point. I don't think we'll necessarily see him on the postseason roster. The same day they called him up, they called up a guy who's not necessarily celebrated as a top prospect, Zach Roscup, who might be the best lefty in their bullpen right now. And he's averaged more than a strikeout per inning in the majors. He's been up, parts of the last three seasons. And Zach Roscup might be, who came up the same day, he might actually be a postseason piece because, outside of Travis Wood, who's been up and down a little bit, I think Zach Roscup might have the best bat-missing ability of any of the lefties they have on that staff, in their bullpen.
From the Chicago Cubs to Boston, where Jackie Bradley Jr. is staging a revival. He's hot, Jonathan, and yet another productive, impactful young player.
I want to say it's the biggest surprise in the world. We've all liked Jackie Bradley Jr., but given the fact that, he sort of had faltered his first couple times in the big leagues, granted with, I guess last year he got a good amount of playing time, it just didn't hit. There's always been a tremendous defensive center fielder, or wherever you put him. The offensive onslaught is, I know it's taken me by surprise, and just the fact that he's gotten the opportunity, it was a very crowded outfield, and I guess a combination of injuries, lack of production, and the fact that the Red Sox were out of it really helped him get a chance to show what he can do. And he's really cementing himself for a spot in that outfield next year. And, it's funny how quickly a guy can go from being a top prospect to being, close to a bust, an also-ran, whatever you want to call it. But he's only 25. So last year when he struggled, he was doing it at age 24 in the big leagues. So it shows you that sometimes patience is an important thing. And I don't know that he's a guy who's going to hit .312 with an OPS of over 1,000 long term. But I think if he settles, somewhere in the mean between the 198 he hit in 2014 and the .312 he's hitting now, and plays the defense he does, he's going to be a very productive regular big league outfielder for the Red Sox.
It's been a roller coaster, Jim, for Jackie Bradley Jr., and now he's gaining.
Yeah, well, I think if you look at Jackie Bradley's history, even going back to South Carolina, he gets in trouble when he tries to do too much at the plate. In 2011, his draft year, he had a wrist injury. He also, that was a year they toned down the bats kind of from anything goes to these really restrictive bats. And he got off to a slow start and tried to do too much and really didn't have a very good year, although he did help South Carolina win their second consecutive College World Series. And, you know, here's a guy who made the opening day roster in 2013 as a surprise, got a chance to play last year, was counted on to replace Jacoby Ellsbury. And both times he struggled. I think he tried to hit for power. He did not control the strike zone like he has, you know, in the minors and when he was going good in college. And, you know, I'm with Jonathan. I mean, he was kind of, you know, got off to a slow start. Not a lot of at-bats early, but, you know, was hitting 121 after his first 24 games this year, you know, in about three or four different stints. And it was kind of at the point where you're wondering, okay, is this guy ever going to hit? I actually thought he was going to be a great buy-low candidate for someone. The Red Sox had a million outfielders. I think Jackie Bradley Jr. has a chance to be the best defensive center fielder in baseball if he plays regularly. He's that good. He's one of these guys with an innate gift for you know, turning his head back to the plate and running to where the ball's going to land. I mean, he probably takes the best outfield, you know, very aggressive, working on his outfield play pregame. He also has a strong, accurate arm. He's got a ton of assists. I think he's the best defensive center fielder. So what Jonathan was saying, I mean, if he were to hit, say, 260, and give you know, walk like he has in the minors and maybe be like a 325, 330 on base percentage, with his defense, he'd be a very good big league player. And you know, I think it's just I don't know what made the light switch go on, and he's certainly not going to keep this up. In his last 25 games, he's hitting 446. He's got an OPS of 1441. He's got 24 extra base hits in those 25 games. I mean, he's just been on fire, you know, and he's letting, you know, I don't think he's going to come anywhere close to sustaining that. But, you know, if you believe in this hot streak and think that he's figured something out, you know, maybe he can give you, you know, 280, you know, with a 350 on-base percentage and a healthy slugging percentage. And with his defense, that would make him a superstar. So I'd say a lot of things have not gone right for the Red Sox this year. But I think the Red Sox at least have to feel pretty good with the way over the last month or so that young outfield of Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Ruzne Castillo has looked, that gives them something to build them around, you know, along with, you know, Xander Bogaerts is an outstanding young shortstop, and Blake Swihart's improved in the second half too. So while a lot's gone wrong for Boston, at least I think they have to feel pretty good about where the lineup's headed.
Very, very quickly, I just want to follow up on that. Both of you guys, if you were running the Red Sox, do you move Mookie out of center field because you feel that Bradley is better, superior defensively, Jonathan?
Oh, not necessarily. I think you have to go with what you think the best outfield is. I mean, if you flip-flop them, you know, does that make it a better outfield? I'm not really sure. You know, especially if, say, Bradley's gotten accustomed to playing the Green Monster, things like that. And that's just proven to be a pretty good outfielder as well, you know, even though he's still relatively new to the position. So, I don't know that you can go wrong either way. You know, maybe Bradley's arm is better from a corner and Betts doesn't have the arm for a corner outfield spot.
Yeah, I guess my answer, I have no question in my mind that Jackie Bradley Jr. is a better center fielder than Mookie Betts, but Mookie Betts has been pretty good too. I think, you know, depending on how you want to deploy these guys, you know, there's something to be said. I mean, that right field is very, you know, once you get away from the pesky pole, right field is very deep at Fenway, and Jackie Bradley on his arm is very good. So you could make that argument for there. I mean, I would probably play my best guy in center field, which would be Jackie Bradley. But he's played well at all three spots. You just got to figure it out. You know, I mean, in my mind, I would probably put Betts in left, Jackie Bradley Jr. in center, and Ruzne Castillo in right. Although, if you wanted to put Mookie Betts in center and Jackie Bradley in right and Ruzne Castillo in left, I could see an argument for that too.
The minor league regular season ended on Labor Day. Jonathan, we'll be talking about this for a long time, but just off the top of your head, who had the best seasons on the mound and at the plate?
Well, you know, on the mound, I think, you know, if I were going to pick one guy as like a pitcher of the year kind of guy, it probably would be Blake Snell, the Rays organization, the lefty who really put it all together this year, led the minor leagues in earned run average, was fifth in strikeouts. He had a 1.41 earned run average. Obviously he's a friend of the podcast, FOP, since he joined us early in the year when he was in the midst of that ridiculously long a scoreless streak to start the season. But what was amazing is that he just kept on pitching well. You know, he started the year in the Florida State League. He moved up to Double A, was fairly dominant there, and then moved up to Triple A, and had a 1.83 ERA and 9 starts in Durham. And he's ready to contribute at the big league level, it seems to me. 182 batting average against over the three different levels, so extremely difficult to hit. And I think the biggest key for him this year compared to in the past is command. It just was so much better. 53 walks and 163 strikeouts, 134 innings. He was durable. He threw a lot more strikes, and the stuff ticked up. So, I mean, that's always going to be a combination for success. And offensively, I guess I would probably go with A.J. Reed. You know, he started the year in the California League, so that always gets a small asterisk by it. But then he kept hitting in Double-A and led the minors in homers, runs batted in, slugging percentage. So that probably would be my tandem.
Yeah, he really demolished the Texas League. Jim, your thoughts on best pitchers, best hitters this past season in the minor leagues?
Yeah, I think those are the two obvious guys. You know, Snell had the second lowest ERA outside of Justin Verlander, had a 1.29 in the last 20 or 25 minor league seasons or so, led the minors in batting average against. I think he's a clear choice of pitcher. I probably have Jose Berrios, who led the minors in strikeouts, as the number two guy. And we won't get sidetracked, but I don't understand how the Twins are staying right there in the wild card race, and you don't call Jose Berrios up. That's inexplicable to me, but that's another story. And then hitting, I mean, A.J. Reed's got to be the obvious choice. I mean, he led the minors with 34 homers, 127 RBIs, finished fourth in batting at 340, led in slugging at 612, led ops 1044, led in runs. And part of that, you know, he was helped by playing in Lancaster, but he continued to rake when he got up to Double A. So I think he's the clear number one. I'm not even sure who my number two guy would actually be in the minors. I guess it might be Lewis Brinson, although he, you know, only played 100 games, so he didn't have quite the counting numbers. But Lewis Brinson in the Rangers system might be my number two choice. But the hitting, it's far and away A.J. Reed had the best season.
Guys, great. Lots of wonderful information. Thank you both. On behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks for listening to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast.